What is up, everybody of Crypto 101, the good citizens of Crypt Nation? We got some good news for you today. Today we are launching a new series, a brand new series that we're calling the Founders Series. So it's one of these things that we're going to be focusing on the people behind the products, the behind the scenes magic, the things that make businesses and projects so wildly successful. You know, we're going to be focusing on getting to know today Patrick Dye and Jordan Earls of Quantum. And the goal is just basically to provide value to anybody, no matter what industry you're in. We meet with top founders in the space all the time. And we said, you know, let's make a show for them. So Patrick, Jordan, welcome to the inaugural founder series of Crypto 101.
Yeah, thank you. Yeah,
thank you for having us.
Yeah, we are, you know, personally big fans of the project and all the things that you guys are doing. So let's first start off with the origin story. How did you two meet?
Yeah, I think we meet online. Yeah.
Yeah. So the real way that we met was basically we had a mutual friend who once operated a mining pool, and he knew me from like some of my work in the community. And basically introduced me to Patrick, like right whenever Quantum was starting to, you know, be designed and be being built and everything.
And so how did you guys decide that you were the right fit for one another? Had you guys met in person before?
No, we never met in person. Yeah, I think we met like in August or like September of 2016. At that time, we just... had the idea of Quantum. We want to build a smart contracts for Bitcoin. And after we got the idea, we started to looking all the talented people. And at that time, it's pretty early for crypto, not too many experienced developer. I think Earth have pretty very good reputation in all the like development community back to 2016. So we try to reach him. And I had a friend who knows Earth. Then I think it's a pretty very good fit at that time. I think at the beginning Earth have some questions and have some maybe Earth can tell you another side of the story. Yeah.
What was like the first interaction like when you pitched him on this idea?
So I literally remember like I was in the kitchen and the mutual friend, his name's Mike, by the way, he messaged me on, I think, Twitter or something like that. And it was like, hey, would you be interested in working on a project? Like, you know, helping to get it started and everything. And the project is out of China and, you know, it's people I really trust and whatnot. And, you know, at this point, we were like deep into like the 2016 crypto winter. Like the whole space just seemed kind of dead.
Yeah.
And I remember I told my wife, or I was helping cook at the time when I got the message, and I was like, "Oh, I got some request to look at some project. They're based out of China. I think they're probably a scam, but I'll talk to them anyway." But you know, then like I talked to Patrick and realized like, this is like the real deal. Like, you know, this isn't just a money grab or anything like that. Like actually trying to move the space forward in a new and unique direction. And, you know, after like the first conversation with Patrick, I was pretty like convinced that like, this is like a good direction to be going.
So Patrick, you reached out to your buddy Mike and said, I'm looking for the best developer in this space, or what, you know, what were you looking for that you found in Jordan?
Yeah. I think at that time we want to look for some guy like a very very experienced in crypto, both like know Bitcoin very well and also kind of have the ability to learn quickly and learn fast and to know Ethereum very well. Because what we want to build on Quantum is like we want to move the smart contract, the whole idea on the Bitcoin network. So back to 2016, at that time I think we do not really have many good developer, and we have like very very few developer like who can understand the both space of Bitcoin and Ethereum. So we want to find the best developer. So when I When I talk to Earls, I think that's one of the that's the right co-founder and the kind of the CTO and the leader developer of the whole quantum project. Yeah,
that's awesome. So the two of you meet up. Was there anyone else involved at that early stage, or was it just the two of you guys?
Yeah, at that time we still have some other developer in China, and we also have another co-founder. He didn't join the Crypto 101 today. His name is Neil. Yeah, Neil, live in Morocco. So I met Neil pretty early, and then we worked together for a few months, and then we talked to ours, and then we three guys become the co-founder at the very beginning. Yeah.
That's awesome. Okay, so the three of you guys get together. What is your very first call like? Patrick, you say, okay, guys, I've got this idea. It's called Quantum. We want to put smart contracts on the Bitcoin network. Yeah. What was their reactions, and what did you guys do going forward? Like, how did you actually get started?
I think we get we have the ideas, and we start a pitch to all everyone. We start a pitch to all the people we can find in China, in US, in Canada. We start a pitch to all the crypto space. At that time, back to 2016, it's not really like today. Oh, you talk to everyone; everyone can understand the idea. At that time, most of people think, "Oh, you want to doing something can never be finished." Yeah, kind of like no one wanted to build like a smart contracts for Bitcoin. Even Vitalik posted something like, "Oh, the UTXO model is not very suitable for the smart contract layer." So a lot of people started questioning us, but we still find a few believers who think like the smart contract ability will make the Bitcoin protocol better. So we pitched to, at that time, we pitched to the Wanxiang Group in China. They are the main investor in crypto in China. And we pitched to Roger Ver and Sonny Diario. He was one of the co-founders of Ethereum, and also Jeremy Garden, the guy behind Augur, and some other people in the crypto space very early. Yeah.
I remember like the first call kind of being Patrick saying like, basically proof of stake, Bitcoin, like, you know, UTXO model, whatever, and smart contracts, somehow combine them all. And at that point, there wasn't like a like set technical model for like how that could actually be built, how that would actually work. And I was thinking like, you know, this is like a very tall order to combine all these things that, you know, they do exist at that point in time, but they have never been put together, basically.
You're like, this sounds impossible. What you're asking is impossible.
And for the first few months, I had thoughts that maybe it was.
But so the model has changed, or correct me if I'm wrong, because the original idea was smart contracts on Bitcoin, but now it's your own smart contract platform. Is that correct?
Yeah.
Yes.
Yeah.
What was the hiccup there? What made you guys realize that smart contracts on Bitcoin, it wasn't ready? Do you think it ever will be ready as well?
I mean, the block size is still 1 megabyte, so I don't think that they're going to accept any kind of radical change in the near future, or maybe even the long-term future.
Yeah, I think the initial idea is to we can like maybe working on some Bitcoin improvement proposal, the BIPs, to make Bitcoin better. But after, you know, the hard fork like of Bitcoin Cash and Bitcoin Satoshi Vision, at that time we realized it's very, very hard to add new features like on the Bitcoin network. So then we decided like, okay, let's start our own like independent blockchain. So that's the reason we have the quantum blockchain. But at that time, we also worried the 51 attack if we use a proof of work consensus. So we decided, okay, we need to do proof of stake, so no one can attack the blockchain. So that's the reason we choose the consensus model as the proof of stake and started the quantum blockchain. Yeah,
that's really wise. I mean, we see so many startup proof of work coins with their bright eyes and big hopes just get absolutely demolished for really any reason. Some people just don't want the competition. Others, you know, just do things for fun. But so it was very wise to start off with proof of stake. And I really like the idea of not reinventing the wheel over and over again, but rather taking the wheel someone made, taking the engine someone else made, and starting to put all these pieces together and see what you can actually build. I think that's how technology really progresses. If we were all just still trying to, you know, figure out the best materials for processors instead of just using silicone, it'd be a huge waste of time.
Yeah.
And I mean, if you look at even like Bitcoin with like Satoshi, you know, he didn't exactly invent any kind of new crazy cryptography stuff.
Right.
He basically just combined things that we've had since the 90s. Like, it's kind of incredible.
Yeah. And look what we've gotten, you know, so far. Okay. So you've got the three of you as a co-founders. Who are your first hires and why? Like, what was the decision to make? Okay, we need to go out and find some guy. We've got three of us to believe in this vision, but this is so important. We need to find someone to pay them to do this job. Who was it and why did you decide that?
Yeah, I can share the story. Yeah, right. Because I joined the industry pretty early, like since 2012. Yeah, so at that time, I meet a lot of people in the crypto space. So it's almost 7 years for me right now. So we hired the first real developer except Jordan Earls. I think another guy. His name is David Johnson. Yeah. David, he live in Sweden. The reason we hired him because earlier in the early of 2017, like I was pretty interested on all the zero knowledge, the Zcash, like the coin, when the Zcash coin released, like at that time we had this pretty big mining farm in China. So we want to build some very good Zcash miner. So we try to find the developer, and then David is the only guy. He made the Zcash miner except the official one. So we think, oh, this is a pretty talented guy. Yeah, so we try to hire him. At the beginning, working for the Zcash magazine, like I persuaded him, like, okay, maybe we have a bigger project. The quantum is more meaningful than just making some small money. So then he joined us as a quantum main developer right now. Yeah.
Awesome. I love that. And so Patrick, does Jordan manage the developers or do you manage the developers?
At the beginning, I manage some of the developer, but right later, Jordan managed most of them. Yeah.
Yeah. And there's also a manager in China that does some management of the developers there as well. Because it's hard to manage from across the world.
Hey, Jordan, how would you describe Patrick's management style?
Very hands-on, I would say. I mean, he's definitely trying to basically be a part and actually help, like, with, you know, figuring out what direction things need to go, how exactly that can be broken up into things. The biggest thing is just that's like extremely time consuming. So he's of course had to, as things have gotten busier and bigger, Patrick's had to shift more things off of himself, which is like, you know, just a natural growing pain.
Patrick, how would you describe Jordan's management style?
I think both of the quantum culture, like the co-founder have some kind of culture. It's like, we like the people self-motivated. Yeah, we like the people like motivated themselves. Yeah, so we kind of have a very soft management. We do not have very hard rules on everyone. We just set up the goal and tell you the timeline. Okay, here is the timeline. We need to finish this. Yeah, no matter what kind of method you take, we need to finish this on time. So we kind of the target, like oriented management. Yeah. Since like we have pretty like a team member working in different area in China, in US, even in Sweden, in Morocco. So it's very hard for us to manage everyone. So it's more like everyone motivated themselves. Yeah.
Yeah. That's the only way you can really work in a decentralized environment. You just have a lot of individuals that believe in what they're doing and wake up in the day wanting to do it. If you don't have that, I mean, it's just a huge problem. So what's the hardest part about getting through the first year? There are so many companies that fail. I think this stat is something like 70% of startups fail in their first year. What was the most difficult part that you guys had to get through?
I mean, there was kind of two parts to it. One was like, you know, the whole technical side, figuring out how to actually make all these pieces fit together and still make it a secure, usable network and everything. But also, it was like 2016, the cryptocurrency space was like still pretty dead. And, you know, we were planning to do a crowd sale. And at that point, crowd sales were extremely unpopular. I mean, there had been some, but never one that, like, of the amount of money that we were looking to raise. I think Patrick could probably talk more about that part of it.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I think the first year is pretty hard. Yeah. But because first we need to raise some like some angel investment from the investor. Like I remember clearly, like we only raised like about $800,000 dollars, less than $1 million. Yeah, it's can only support the team like half a year. So we need to do something in half a year to show the investor like we are able to build something great. Yeah. And I think for every startup you need to work super hard for sure. So kind of every day we wake up at 5 a.m. we started the work every day 5 a.m. we work more like 18 hours per day, or like even except sleep you are working 18 hours per day. Yeah, so just to finish everything in 6 months, and then we have some real demo before the card sale. We can tell people, okay, the prototype is ready. The idea can work. Yeah. So if you invest, if you participate in the crowd sale, we kind of guarantee like we will release something, or like it's not only a promise. Yeah. So kind of that's for every startup, you need to worry about two things. First is funding, get the money for like 6 months, and then for the 18 months, for 1.5 years. I think that's a pretty short term and the middle term target. And then, like, how can you deliver the products? Yeah.
What would you say is the most critical initiative that you guys are working on today with Quantum?
Maybe Urs can give something. Yeah. He's working on something very exciting.
I mean, we kind of have a few different directions, but probably one of the most important is basically kind of trying to correct a lot of the problems in the space, as well as adding some new features, like basically trying, I feel like right now with smart contracts and everything, we're kind of at like, you know, internet 1.0, where we're stuck with dial-up, where, you know, like websites look terrible or hard to use. And most of the time it's just a phone number for actually doing work. And, you know, we're trying to kind of take that to the next level. I mean, I won't bore you with all the technical details and everything, but basically we're building a new, like basically a 2.0 or 3.0 maybe of our like smart contract platform, where people will write smart contracts in a completely different way that is, you know, kind of refreshing compared to how it currently is, and using new programming language, and, you know, they have all these like new features and things that basically will make it harder to write insecure code. So hopefully, like, you know, hacks and everything like that will be much less common on our platform. And also we have, you know, some mitigations for how to actually plan for being hacked and things like that, and being able to react to that technically. Whereas like on Ethereum and other platforms right now, it's fairly difficult to really plan for that. And yeah, and also we're looking at, you know, the famous like blockchain size problem, how it always is growing, and looking at a way to basically limit that growth. And then also scaling with like sidechain kind of things. And then privacy. We're working with some people that we're basically researching on how to integrate some privacy technology into the smart contract platform, so that you can actually write like, you know, a smart contract token or whatever, where all the transactions within it are actually private. You can't see who, where it's sent and whatnot. Yeah, quite a few different directions.
Yeah.
Yeah, you bring up a really good point. Disaster recovery is pretty much non-existent in blockchain right now. And that's going to be a huge step forward, especially for corporate and institutional adoption of smart contracts, government platforms, and anything to do with autonomous vehicles. You need to know that, you know, your autonomous car and smart contract is not going to get hacked and it drives to the new owner's house and abandons you. You know, yeah. There's going to be so many things like that that need to take place still. So that's really cool. And it takes a lot of, you know, hardship and trial and error to overcome these things to get to that level. How do you guys individually inspire your team? Is it what is your leadership strategy? Is it, do you lead by example, or do you guys give your tremendous speeches, or what's your strategy to keep your team motivated and working those 18-hour days?
Yeah, I think at the early time, it's kind of everyone, the main team member of Quantum, we believe what we are building. I think that's the most important thing. All the team member, no matter how you run your startup, the team member should believe you are doing something meaningful. Yeah, you are doing something gonna change the whole crypto space, or no matter how big the step, but it's a small step to change something. Yeah, I think at the beginning, people believe in this, and they have self motivation, and also we encourage the developer, they can write articles to share the idea with the rest of the community. Kind of you get a feedback from the community, so you know if you are working on something people are interested, or people can give you a lot of feedback. Yeah, so we ask all the developers, they can have some interaction with the real community people, real developer, to get the feedback. Yeah.
So I'm just to confirm, I'm hearing a couple things. So part of your leadership strategy is in the initial selection of people that kind of exhibit this quality of a believer, somebody who you could tell is enthusiastic, yeah. Self-motivated. So that's a big part of leadership is choosing the right people, I guess. And the other one that you were talking about that I thought was really cool was how you encourage people to get involved with the community. And you say, you know, you're Patrick, you're a leader, and Jordan, you're a leader, but you need to make your team leaders. So encouraging them to go out and be good representatives and blog and everything. Those are two really good points that we should take away from this.
Mm-hmm.
And kind of for me, I mean, the early days were kind of different from today, because, you know, like the early days, it was basically like, this has to be built or we might have to close shop. So everyone was very new, the implicit motivation basically behind all that. You know, today it's, we're not working 18-hour days still. Basically, my personal management leadership style is to convince everyone that they should be excited about building this new thing. And really, my ideal person is someone who I can come to and say, hey, I have this awesome new proposal. I'm super excited about it. Can you look at building it? And they come back to me and say, this design is stupid. It won't work. I want someone who's not afraid to basically think outside the box, including, you know, the box that I'm building, basically. And my kind of style of managing people is convince them the direction to go. And I give, you know, the some steps and things for how to do it. But I'm not sitting there holding your hand, watching you write code, making sure that you're doing it in my style and everything. Some of the best code we've had was where I wrote code that was kind of bad, but it was written. And then they rewrote it basically to make it less terrible. Yeah, so I mean, the main important thing for me is also selection, with Patrick, have to get someone that actually believes in the project, believes that, you know, it's more than just a day job. They want to actually, you know, have some motivation for being a part of something that changes the world, you know.
Would you guys say it's maybe then better to not have someone fill an empty role if they're just not the right person? It's better just to work the extra hours yourself than bring on someone that might not fit into the culture?
It can be. I mean, it kind of depends on the exact roles and needs and everything. I mean, if it's something like Rush, then kind of you have to settle with what you get. But in general, I think that, you know, having the right people maintains that culture, and putting the wrong person in the wrong role can potentially harm that culture and, you know, have effects across the entire team rather than just, you know, bad performance in that one role.
Is there any notable times that you guys hired someone who was the wrong person and then you had to like let them go or address that situation?
I think like until right now, kind of no one left the Quantum team. Yeah, we hired the people. I think only one guy left the team because not because of the work performance, because his girlfriend. Yeah, so it's kind of like all the other people we hired until right now. No one left the team. I think that's kind of we selected the right person, the right people to join us.
Yeah,
that's also an amazing testament to you guys as leaders that, you know, you have nobody wants, there's no turnover rate because nobody wants to leave.
Yeah, nobody wants to leave. Yeah.
The only exception was we were using a like a contracting company that we like had to terminate the agreement with basically because like the quality of their work wasn't really up to par. But I mean, in general, though, we've been very careful about selecting people.
Yeah, all the full-time, like full-time employee or full-time developer, like we only choose the best guy, the best of the best. Yeah, kind of the best of the best. Yeah, in China, we have a pretty like a very good development team. They both, most of them graduated from the best university. Yeah, kind of MIT or not from MIT, kind of from Peking University or like the China Academy of Science. It's similar like MIT or Harvard in US. Yeah, so it's the best university. We hire the best people.
That's really good. And just to touch on what Jordan was saying a second ago about contracting companies, I know the gig economy is very much a strong growing trend here in the United States, where people aren't employees and they really have to go from contract to contract and gig to gig to survive. But what that does is that completely eliminates any passion you have for the work you're doing. There's no security you're offered. There's no camaraderie. You report to different people every week. And I think the work quality really does suffer. So it's not even so much a consequence of a contracting company having bad people, but the actual nature of using a contracting company itself is not set up for success for anyone involved. And I'm hoping that there's more awareness being put to that and businesses stop trying to squeeze every last little dollar of getting to get out of overtime and healthcare benefits and stuff and actually treat people like they matter, and the people will treat the company and their work like it matters too.
Yeah. I mean, there's a real difference between like, you know, people that are doing like, you know, a contract where they're just doing some small project for the company and one where they're like personally invested in seeing the company succeed. And that's why I think we've like been mostly focused on only like doing like full-time and part-time employees directly rather than, you know, having contract companies and such.
Hey, Patrick, could you talk about a time that you guys experienced a drawback or, you know, let's call it a failure, and how you and Jordan came together to overcome that?
Yeah, I think like... We got some failure like experience when the crypto bubble like kind of broke like in 2018. Yeah, as all the guys know, the price crashed a lot, and then people the community kind of become like impatient. Like people will question you. Are you building something really meaningful or like a kind of, that's kind of a better experience. So because the crypto space is kind of more like a technology plus the financial part together. Yeah, it's two area like together. So most of the developer or like most of the crypto team kind of, we grew up from the community, we know the technology, but we are not the experts on trading. We are not the experts on the financial, on finance. Yeah. So sometimes that's kind of bring some problems. For me and Earth, I think both of us kind of feel like it's hard to face that part sometimes. Yeah. But we try to look back to the like the Nasdaq bubble in back to 2000, like the first like internet bubbles. Yeah. I think the great company can survive from the big bubble, and then we encourage like each other, kind of okay, we need to focus on the real tech, focus on something meaningful. Even if it's hard time, we need to do something we think is right. We need to do something we think in long term have value, not only for short term value. You pump the price. I think it's never works. Yeah, it works in few day or few months, but it's not working in few years. Yeah, so we only focus on the long term value, and I think that give us like more insistence on to believe like what we are building. In long term.
So you guys overcome short-term challenges with a long-term perspective. I think that's a really good note to take away from this. Jordan, did the price rise in 2017 really surprise you? Was that something that you were like, oh, you know, what was your reaction during that whole time?
Yeah, I remember being pretty surprised. Like we were expecting like a much, you know, we were expecting it to do at least kind of okay, maybe rise a little bit. We were not expecting the response that it had immediately, like following the crowd sell whenever the trading markets opened for like, you know, before the actual product was launched. That was like a pretty like incredible time, just because like I don't think anyone on the team like exactly expected it to go exactly like to the level that it did. It was pretty insane.
Hey, Crip Nation, real quick interruption from our wonderful sponsors over at eToro. If you guys haven't had a chance to check them out yet, I mean, we talk about them every day. You guys should really go check them out. Just go to crypto101podcast.com/eToro. And Pete, why don't you tell them about them? What is eToro?
It's one of the easiest ways to buy and sell crypto with confidence, first of all. They've been around since 2007. All the assets they have on there have been looked at really, really well. It's legal in over 140 countries and trusted by over 10 million users. So if you're not one of them, why?
Yeah, seriously, you got to be asking yourself that question. And, you know, they've been around since 2007. They started trading crypto assets in 2013. So these cats are the real freaking deal. And my favorite aspect about it is that it's so beginner friendly and it's so expert friendly, but they give you this $100,000 virtual trading simulator so you can practice, you know, executing trades and, you know, technical analysis and all that kind of stuff before you actually put your money where your mouth is. So that's my favorite aspect of the whole thing.
My favorite aspect is how easy it is to sign up. I didn't have to wait days for KYC to be approved or anything like that. Literally within 2 minutes, I was able to use my account.
Yeah, it's nuts. Anyhow, guys, as you know, not all platforms are created equal. So go ahead, check it out for yourself. And then hit us with a DM and let us know what you guys think. All right, back to the show.
I want to paint a picture for the audience that may not have been in the space at that time. But basically what happened is, you know, you're having business going along and it's going well. And then all of a sudden, literally in a matter of a month, you have 10 times the amount of money that you had the prior month. And you're just experiencing euphoria. Your community is beside itself. You know, everyone is just beyond the happiest of happy they've ever been. But not even a quarter later, that all starts to evaporate and disappear. And from a founder's point of view, you're looking at your coffers saying, okay, I have this much value that I can use to build my company. But the crypto community, they're not economists. You know, they're very much emotion driven. While it would make the most sense to sell off crypto into stable coins or something at that time to give your company, you know, the most resources available, selling your own tokens, I mean, is just a sign of giving up from the perspective of your community. A founder absolutely can never sell their tokens without some kind of enormous backlash. So the situation every founder in crypto was facing at that time is, I suddenly have hundreds of billions of dollars that are evaporating a million or multi-millions of dollars a day. What do I do? Do I risk a mutiny and scaring off all my contributors and supporters that got me here? Do I, you know, try and quietly do this? Do I be completely transparent? Do I tell them, look, you know, this is just a macroeconomic thing. We're going into another bear market. I'm not leaving. But does that still then start like another panic sell and you guys drop another 120% in a day? It was just all this really crazy high pressure stuff that was going on, and every founder had to really make a decision for themselves. I know Charlie Lee at Litecoin tapped out and sold at the top, and the backlash he got from that was enormous. And I think that also played into a lot of other founders' minds as well, saying, well, maybe I don't want to do that. You know, I know the market's going to recover again. You know, I'll just hold on for now. So it, I won't put you guys on the hot seat and ask what you guys did, but it was something that's a very difficult decision in a very difficult time. But by taking that long-term approach and not even worrying about the market conditions, I think you guys have really continued to set yourself up for success. And we can certainly see that recognized in your market share right now.
I kind of believe that, like, you do good things and the market will follow. If you try to lead the market, it's not going to go well, basically.
Yeah, I like that viewpoint. You know, so what's the developer community look like that surrounds Quantum? It's an open source project, and I know you guys have, you know, tens of thousands of nodes kind of geographically distributed. But, you know, what's that developer community look like? And also, both of you, what is your favorite app that you've seen built on Quantum?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I think it's like the Quantum developer community is kind of because right now the main source code, we have part of the source code still, like we merged like the Bitcoin source code. Yeah. So kind of we need we kind of absorbed like all the best tech still from the Bitcoin community right now. So a lot of Bitcoin developer, they contribute to Bitcoin. We get all the advantage on the Quantum platform. And also from the Ethereum like a developer community, like all the developers, what kind of smart contract they wrote, like for the they write for the Ethereum platform can be like reused on the Quantum platform too. Yeah, but besides that, we still have the Quantum developer like in China. I think also in other countries, like they are working on some features only can work on Quantum. So that's kind of we combined the three parts of the developer community. Yeah, Bitcoin, Ethereum, and Quantum. Yeah.
Just for a little bit more perspective, of course, the community is a little bit less active today than it was in, like, you know, 2017, 2018, just because of, you know, the market conditions, it's less exciting, whatever. But there's still like a good quality number of decentralized applications out there. And basically, I think everyone is kind of waiting for our next step of like this new version of the platform where we're kind of changing absolutely everything. And I think it's kind of hard to, like, you know, it would have been great if it would been like released like already, but, you know, it's not. And we're having to make sure that we're doing it right rather than just trying to rush something out of the door to get, like, you know, hype or whatever.
Is there going to be a hard fork?
Yes.
Yeah. Well, there's actually a hard fork coming up like in a few days, October 16th.
Yes.
And that's like a minor thing. The hard fork that to basically really cool. enable this new platform is like kind of halfway planned for like quarter three or quarter four of next year in 2020. So it's still like a ways out, but we're hoping to have like a prototype out that people can actually start playing with and everything like fairly soon, like hopefully by the end of the year. Mm-hmm. Oh, and for the favorite application built on Quantum, I think Vevue is pretty cool. They're like a video streaming platform, and they've like done, or not video streaming, but like a, well, kind of, but they have like funded movies and like art films and things, and have even had like red carpet events. Pretty cool.
Yeah, I think I like I like one of the dApp. Even they are not popular today, but I think it's kind of very interesting. It's like the space chain. Yeah, the space. Yeah, yeah, the guy who like really launched like a three satellite to
that's
the space.
That's Zizeng, right? Kind of, and Garzik.
ZZ with Jeff Garzik. Yeah, that's kind of something I think we want to see in crypto or like in the blockchain area, because blockchain we. Because I kind of feeling like the whole industry right now is struggling to trying to find out a new direction. So I think we need some creative work. We need some wild idea. Sometimes for the startup, you need some wild mind or the wild idea. But I think that's something really changed like the can move forward the current situation. Otherwise, I think a lot of the dApps, a lot of the industry. Application, they cannot really move forward. Yeah, we need some people be brave. We need some people be be smart and to create something never existed before. I think that's a real spirit of the blockchain world. Yeah, it's like the first idea of Bitcoin. It's like the something from zero to one. I think I wanted to see some application like from zero to one, not to make the current centralized application better, but to create some totally new, different like blockchain applications. Yeah, so that's something I think I wanted to see in the whole crypto space. Yeah.
That's a great answer. And the good news is there are a few seeds out there. We'll just have to wait and see which ones sprout. But from your perspectives, what excites you most about the future of crypto? What little projects or developers are you looking at to see what they're building?
Yeah, I think I wanted to see something, because what I'm feeling is kind of right now is kind of since the beginning of Bitcoin, and then we have the Ethereum, we have the smart contract idea, and after Bitcoin and the smart contract breakthrough, we didn't see any real breakthrough since 2018 until right now. Yeah, we didn't see some original design or some like original idea or some original creative work from the industry, except the Bitcoin idea as a digital gold, and then smart contract to add more like a flexibility to kind of like manage the Bitcoin better or manage the coin better. Yeah, after that we didn't see any creative work. Yeah, and then all the people is following Ethereum trying to build a better smart contract platform. But even for Ethereum today, people realize the kind of decentralized application is facing some very, very, very big problem right now. Yeah. So what we want to encourage on Quantum is kind of we want people use the blockchain features, but not really 100% decentralized. Sometimes you do not really decentralize cannot like naturally like give you more value. But the blockchain features can give you value, like the totally new like account system and identity system, and the blockchain as a clearing and a settlement protocol. And if you have a very good token design, that can boost like your business from the very beginning. So we want to build some new architecture for the next generation of blockchain application, not a decentralized application. I think there is a very big difference between dApps and the B apps and the blockchain application and the decentralized application, the two different concepts. Yeah. So what I really wanted to see is kind of we wanted to see someday we have a decentralized search engine like a decentralized Google or like a decentralized Facebook, and it can happen. Not right now, but in few year, 5 years, 3 year, it can happen with some new like architecture being built right now, like the Handshake. They are building some decentralized DNS and with decentralized storage and with decentralized the content like generate like a platform. Then we will gather more and more information in a decentralized world. Then we need some decentralized Google or like a decentralized search engine. I think it's kind of the real future to build a decentralized blockchain world. Yeah,
I've never heard it. I've never heard that dichotomy before between a D app and a B app. I think that's the first time we were introduced to that.
Yeah, I think we have that idea because I was thinking kind of that problem for pretty 2 years. At the very beginning of 2018, I realized pretty in long term, the dApps will not work, but the blockchain apps will work in long term.
There's some really interesting things that really could be a 0-to-1 impact on the world that are just in its infancy. As far as like peer-to-peer payment solutions, I know Flexa is doing some really interesting things. As far as IoT and oracles and smart contracts, XYO is really trying to create like a whole new layer of data across the internet. And there's a bunch of other like really small cap coins that have some very unique ideas. Some of them, you know, are really struggling to get through this crypto winter, and it's going to be interesting to see who makes it out the other end. But I think, you know, come 2020 or even 2021, we're going to look around and be like, oh my God, where did this come from? But these people were working on it very quietly for 3-4 years, and the future of crypto and blockchain and decentralized networks is going to be phenomenal.
Yeah, I believe that will happen.
What do you think is going to take to knock out 20K for Bitcoin? When do you think that's going to happen, and what's going to be the impetus to really push it above to new all-time highs?
I think I kind of know the Chinese market better. Yeah, because I live in Shanghai most of the time. So I talked to a lot of miners and the mining company, like Bitmain or like What's Miner or like all the bigger mining company. I think they this year they have a lot of orders like from the mining interest, a lot of mining group. They placed some big order on the mining machine. So a lot of people in China, they still like have some long position on Bitcoin right now. I think before the halving on May, yeah, next year, 2020, I think the Bitcoin price gonna reach the highest price, the 20,000, pretty less than 1 year right now. Yeah.
Yeah, I definitely also think the halving will, because there's always like a lot of just unpredictable markets that happen around every halving that happens.
Yeah, what was it like in the last couple? I mean, you've been around for the other halvenings, is that correct? And what was there like the media attention was all around it, or what was the vibe?
I think the media attention and the people like made a lot of analysis, like because of the inflation rate will be reduced to half two. So that's kind of the supply will be limited, and so people have more interest on all these things. Yeah, and also what we can see right now is kind of more and more compliance the platform being launched right now, like the BAKKT, the bucket. Yeah, so they've already been released. Even the volume is not big, but I think it's a good sign of like some institution investor, they can join they can participate in the market right now. I think that's have some significant like influence in long term. Yeah.
What's one person you guys admire in the crypto space who's outside of quantum?
Maybe Earth can say something.
I mean, I kind of already said it, but like, I guess the original Satoshi, because like, took all these ideas that, or rather he took all these technologies and things that had already been invented, like they're just waiting to be combined into Bitcoin. Like all the technology for actually building Bitcoin basically existed like since at least 2000 and arguably since like 1990. But you know, no one had ever thought to actually, you know, combine like cryptographic hashes and public key cryptography, and then like build this structure that had never been heard of called a blockchain where things can't be censored. I think that that's like pretty incredible that somehow no one had discovered it previously, yet somehow Satoshi did. It's almost like, you know, the invention of the wheel. Like, you know, there's like no reason why if you have rocks, you can't make a wheel, but I'm not sure how long the wheel took to be invented, but you know, it's kind of that similar thing. But there's a few other people I admire in the space. Like, of course, there's all the Ethereum people, which have, you know, kind of like built the whole smart contract concept into blockchains for the first time. Don't agree with everything they did, but either way. And there's a few people like Zucky, the founder of Cosmos, who's kind of like a really interesting person and has some really like kind of out there ideas that end up working. But yeah, I could probably name more, but.
No, that's all. We actually just had the guys from Cosmos on the other week. We had Jack Zamplin on. Wow. Really smart team. But so our last question that we'd like to ask you guys, you know, if there's just one quick little word of wisdom from somebody who's been in the space for a long time, who's been building a business, you know, what would you tell somebody whose first time it is getting into crypto?
So what have you wanted to tell to the newcomer? Yeah, I think the reason why I joined the crypto is kind of I like the, at the beginning, I like the culture. I kind of like the culture of the cyberpunk. Yeah. So it's kind of making me feeling, okay, the people, they are working hardly, they are working very hard and they are working silently, but they are bringing some change and bringing some movement to the whole society. Yeah, they are the silent hero behind everything you can see. Yeah, so kind of I want to vote for Satoshi too, and I vote for the guy who invented the Mimblewimble protocol. I think you hear the coin, like the green, the founder of green, he have similar like a personality with Satoshi Nakamoto. Yeah. So that's kind of the real hero behind the whole crypto space. They never greedy on money. They never greedy on fame. But they just want to create something like never existed before and can be used, can be very useful for the society. Yeah. So I think for sure, like all the founder or like all the people who started most of the people started the startup. They want to make money. They want to generate revenue. They want to do something. Yeah. But I think, if you do the right thing in long term, you will make the money for sure. So I think first, no matter what you want to do, make sure you are doing something right. Yeah, you are doing something valuable. And when you make that happen, and I think people will reward you what you want. Yeah, but first do the right thing, do something valuable. Yeah, so even in a crypto space is an unregulated space right now. It's kind of the Wild West. But still, I hope every people who want to join the crypto space do the things you think is right. Yeah. Even we have no regulation, no hard regulation right now. You can do something bad. You can do something no one will know. But still, do the good thing, do the right thing, and do the thing valuable. Yeah.
Kind of for my word of wisdom for anyone getting into the space is don't really come here solely to make money. You can make money as a side effect, basically, but in general, like the most powerful thing about Bitcoin and the whole cryptocurrency community is how it's kind of like the next direction. It's like the early internet. It's like, one of those things that I feel like we're right on the cusp of like something fundamental about the world being changed. But, if you try to basically, you only care about making money from that, you're going to probably end up being disappointed because there's a lot more to it. It's like Patrick said, it's basically almost like a movement, like, the cypherpunk movement or everything. And for anyone like, wanting to basically build their own business and everything on it, of course, there's all kinds of planning and things that need to be done before any money gets spent, any code gets written. But I think the most important thing is whenever you're like, picking out those early first hires and such is like find someone who, it's kind of like building a house or something. You want to find someone who can look at your blueprints and get excited and like just know what they can help with and do, rather than someone where you need to direct to each thing, like, okay, you need nails here, here, and here. You need, some wood here, whatever. Having someone that understands your vision and everything and doesn't have to have you holding their hand through the whole process is like one of the big things for early hires and such.
That's amazing. Yes, it seems like a big theme of you guys as founders is just having people that are self-starters. And there's honestly nothing more valuable than somebody who has initiative. So everybody listening here today, tomorrow, next week at work, take some initiative. You'll really impress your bosses. Guys, thank you guys so much for spending an hour with us this afternoon. And we've just really enjoyed getting to know you guys and the founding origin story of Quantum.
Yeah, thank you.
Thanks so much for having us.
Our pleasure. We'll bring you on the podcast again very soon.
Yeah, it was really fun.
Yeah, it's cool. Yeah, thank you.
Good health starts with seeing the whole picture and everyone in it. It's why Rutgers Health has dedicated billions of dollars in research to solve some of the greatest challenges and address inequities. From prenatal care to childhood illness to cardiovascular disease, we're leading the research that's improving lives. Rutgers Health, because all people deserve good health.
Your old or broken phone can let you down when you need it most.
Perfect.
But at Verizon, trade in any old phone from our top brands and get the most for it, up to $2,000 in value, for an amazing new iPhone 16 Pro with Apple Intelligence and a new line on my plan, and iPad and Apple Watch Series 10. That's like a 3-for-1. And you can get it on any plan. At Verizon, trade in your old phone for a brand new iPhone 16 Pro, iPad, and Apple Watch. The other guys won't give you that. Visit Verizon.com today. Additional terms apply. Service plan required for Apple Watch and iPad. Up to $2,000 value based on iPhone, iPad, and Apple Watch.